Good morning, Mr. Adams.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name's Hall Adams. I represent Wes Williams, who only wants a jury trial. That the trial court, the district court, has thus far wrongfully denied him by entering summary judgment in favor of the defendants. The district court did that respectfully by acting as a trier of fact, by weighing evidence, by ignoring evidence, and by failing to apply the standard for summary judgment, which required that the district court look at all the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, give the plaintiff the benefit of all reasonable inferences, and to ask the important question, what would a reasonable jury do with this record? Could a reasonable jury on this record find for the plaintiff and against each of the defendants with respect to the district court on this record? A reasonable jury could find in favor of Wes Williams and against each of the individual defendants.
Now, Mr. Adams, there seems to be undisputed evidence in the record that Williams injured the lens of his eye long before he entered the jail, because 6 months earlier, he told his doctor he needed to have his lens replaced. Given that he didn't have this treated for at least 6 months, what evidence is there in the record that the situation became more dire when he was in jail? And where is the evidence that the defendants actually knew about this lens problem or knew that it had become more dire?
Respectfully, Judge, the evidence that there was such an injury before the period of confinement is disputed. Williams himself has denied it. We acknowledge there's a reference in an earlier medical record about a lens injury.
Right.
You've asked further about evidence that the lens condition got worse after the confinement. When Williams was taken into custody, he was examined. His eyes were examined. There were no complaints of any vision deficit in the left eye, no finding of any problem with the left eye. And as this record makes abundantly clear, after the fall reported on the 17th of April, there are both complaints of additional symptoms and diminished vision in the left eye, as well as findings of diminished vision in the left eye by the jail staff. And further, Your Honor, I'd suggest that when the injury to the left eye lens occurred is beside the point. He had the injury. It required urgent repair. At least by 17 May of 2005, the medical director of the jail, Dr. Guzman, had recognized that Williams needed to be seen by a competent ophthalmologist who had the training, experience, and equipment to diagnose and treat whatever the problem was with his eye. Williams couldn't walk out on his own and get that treatment. He was in jail.
Am I wrong if I think that he was treated eventually, whatever, but without any real consequences to his eye?
Yes, Your Honor, respectfully, you are wrong.
Okay.
For a period of 3 months or more, from the fall on the 17th of April until the 19th of July, when he's finally seen at the Wheaton Eye Clinic, Williams couldn't see out of his left eye. Respectfully, Judge, that's a serious consequence. In addition, his pain and discomfort are a sufficiently serious consequence under the holdings of this court in other 1983 actions.
Well, will the record tell us if he can see now? Out of that eye?
Yes, the record will and does tell us. If you look at the deposition testimony of Dr. Daly, as well as the deposition testimony of Wes Williams himself, you'll see that he's been prescribed, after the surgical correction of the lens dislocation, he's been prescribed contact lenses. And when he is able to take advantage of contact lenses, which is to say when he can afford contact lenses, He can see much better out of that left eye than he was able to when he made it in finally to see Daly on the 19th of July. I would, at the risk of being redundant, ask that whomever is tasked with the chore of combing the factual record for triable issues start with Plaintiff's Exhibit 4, the written grievance that Williams provided to Officer Mannion, his so-called advocate, beginning at page 5, where Williams chronicles his documented conditions, his symptoms, and all that he had done for the 2-plus months prior to grieving to Mannion to get the care he needed for those conditions that had been prescribed for him by the medical director of the jail that had been denied.
Now, someone is wrong about the record on the question of whether he was taking amitriptyline before he arrived at the jail. So where in the record will we find evidence that he was taking the drug before he arrived at the prison?
You'll find it in Williams' deposition testimony, and you'll find it in the deposition testimony of Dr. Jorge Ascanapi, the Loyola neurologist who prescribed it in the first place and who testified that when Williams took the medicine before he was taken into custody on the 14th of April, it did improve and control his symptoms secondary to the peripheral neuropathy. That's where you'll find...
Where did he get it?
He got it from a number of pharmacies, including Williams testified, the Target Pharmacy. And we acknowledge that the records produced by a Target Pharmacy don't reflect that such a prescription was filled. Williams has testified, however, there is some evidence in this record that the defendant is free to dispute with records, if it chooses at trial, that create a tribal question of fact. Further, Your Honor, I'd suggest it's again irrelevant. The record here is that the jail's own medical director recognized the need, Williams' need for this medicine. He prescribed it.
Is that Guzman?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
he prescribed it in May, and Williams didn't get it for 2 months.
Okay, he was surprised to find that. But other medications were being presented to Williams during this time.
Yes, sir.
And apparently he didn't say, where's my amitriptyline or whatever it's called?
Like it's spelled.
Well, if I look at it, sometimes I can read it. It's kind of like the governor's name. You know, I can't pronounce it. But in any event, why didn't he ask for it? Other than
there's evidence in the record, Your Honor, that he did ask for it, that he asked every health care provider in that jail he came in contact
each
with
time
for this medicine.
When they were bringing him medicine, whoever that was, not any of the defendants, I guess, but whoever was bringing the medicine, he was asking for that.
Yes, sir. And Williams has testified, and we provided the deposition page citations in the...
Because they say he didn't ask for it.
I'm sorry?
The other side says he didn't ask for it. That's why I'm asking.
And that, Your Honor, is why we have juries and jury trials, which is all Williams wants today.
Well, let me ask this. Is this claim narrowly confined to the deprivation of amitriptyline, or is this a peripheral neuropathy failure to treat claim?
The claim is that the deliberate indifference occurred in two respects. The eye issue is one. The other is that the jail medical staff knew he had the condition, knew after they had talked with Ascanapi and recorded those conversations of its severity, knew that he had been prescribed this medicine to control that condition. So it's not a failure to diagnose. They knew he had the condition. They knew he needed the medicine. It was written all over his chart. They just didn't give it to him for 3 months. That's what the claim is.
I'm not sure you understand the import of my question here. I'm suggesting that the whole issue or intense focus on the failure to fill the prescription for amitriptyline is too narrow, because the claim really relates to his peripheral neuropathy and whether it was appropriately treated, once it was known that he had this disorder. And, you know, maybe there were other drugs that could have been provided that would have alleviated the condition. I know this is the one that was prescribed for him on the outside and, in fact, eventually prescribed for him on the inside. But if the claim is more broadly understood as one of deliberate indifference of his peripheral neuropathy and the failure to prescribe or provide the particular medication is part of it, but you know, perhaps there was something else that could have been done to alleviate his pain,
the issue is
not as important.
I guess I get it more clearly now, Your Honor. We have not alleged, and at deposition, Dr. Ascanapi, the Loyola neurologist, has not provided us with any testimony that there was any other way to treat Wes Williams' peripheral neuropathy than with amitriptyline. And therefore, I view it as two sides of the same coin, that the failure to treat efficaciously the peripheral neuropathy was the failure to timely provide him with the medicine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Vogt.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Robert Vogt. I represent the medical defendants in this case, and we believe the trial court correctly granted summary judgment to the defendants in this case, and that no issue of fact remained for a jury to consider. Your Honors, in connection with the plaintiff's eye injury, our brief outlines that it's undisputed in this case what happened. The plaintiff suffered a partial dislocation of a lens. Now, the physical structure of the eye, Your Honors, is such that there is the cornea, which is the outside windshield of the eye, underneath that the interior chamber, then the posterior chamber, then the iris, and finally, beneath all of that is where the lens sits. Now, the undisputed testimony in this case is that his cornea and his interior chamber of his eye were normal. When they were examined by all of the nurses, all of the doctors, even the eye specialist, his cornea and the interior chamber of his eye were normal. To all appearances, he had no eye injury while he was in jail. In order to diagnose that, specialized equipment was necessary, and that is why on May 17th, when he first raised this issue with Dr. Guzman, Dr. Guzman referred him to a specialist, the Wheaton Eye Clinic, and an appointment was then made, and he was seen and treated at the Wheaton Eye Clinic. But I would submit to the court, as a matter of physical necessity, that he could not have injured his eye in the jail simply because the outer portions of the eye, which would be clearly obvious, you know, if you, I don't even know how you could injure the lens four membranes underneath the outer portion of the eye without also injuring the eye. And that is why he initially told the doctor back in November of 2004 that he already had it because, in fact, he did.
Someone must have told him that.
Yeah, someone must, exactly, Judge. You cannot diagnose that condition yourself. A specialist needs to have told him that he had a dislocated lens. Now, the evidence is that it's not a crisis. I mean, when you have a dislocated lens like him, and the testimony in this case, the parties agree that once he has that dislocation, it may interfere with his vision, but he can go about his life like he did here. It was not an emergency. He ultimately got the surgery, and I'll quote from the parties' agreement. The condition of the plaintiff's left eye after Dr. Daly's surgery and the placement of the contact lens would have been the same regardless of when the plaintiff obtained the treatment. It was a condition that needed to be corrected. That is true. And it was. And there was no detrimental effect because it had been there for months and months and months. And from that perspective, Your Honor, there was no issue here as far as needing a trial because he received the surgery that he needed while he was incarcerated at the jail. And as a matter of law and the evidence in this case, there was no detrimental effect to any alleged delay in connection with the surgery.
Well, can we talk about the amitriptyline?
Certainly, Judge.
Where in the record will we find evidence that he was not taking this drug before he arrived at the prison? Are you relying solely on the fact that he didn't purchase it at Target? I mean, like, did he concede somewhere in the record that he purchased all of his medications at Target?
Well, I can say this, Judge. When he came into the jail, he told us that Target on 9th Avenue in Melrose Park was where he obtained his prescriptions. The nurses, Nurse Pava, in fact, one of the defendants, called and confirmed that's where his prescription was. I then subpoenaed the records from Target, and that's part of the appendix that was presented to the court, and those records are conclusive that he never purchased his amitriptyline there. He purchased his Coumadin there on a monthly basis, very religiously, but he never purchased amitriptyline from January until April. And that was exactly what the trial court found, and that's consistent with the evidence. I would submit to the court, and you've heard this already, summary judgment is the put up or shut up phase of the trial. If Mr. Williams was purchasing this amitriptyline from another pharmacy, he was obligated to come forward and say, no, vote's wrong, it wasn't Target, it's here, it's here, it's here. And he never did because there is no other records. And I would submit to the court that it really stretches logic to suggest that he would buy his Coumadin from Target but his amitriptyline from a different pharmacy. It wouldn't make any sense.
But there is no question that it was prescribed. I mean, that's been documented by his physician.
You are correct.
On the street, so to speak.
Yes, in January of 2005, it was prescribed to him. That is correct, Judge.
And so the fact that he didn't fill the prescription, or we could infer that perhaps he didn't fill the prescription because he hasn't come forward with any proof of that.
Yes, Judge.
Before his arrest, may go to the issue of damages. I'm not sure it goes to deliberate indifference once the doctors on the inside knew that he had this condition and had been prescribed the medication.
Well, the amitriptyline's unique in two different respects, Judge. First of all, I would submit that the best evidence of a patient's need for a medication is whether the patient actually goes out and takes the medication. And that's what the trial court recognized. In this case, he did not have a serious medical need for amitriptyline because by his own conduct, the best evidence that we have, he never went and purchased it. You know, I look at it very commonsensically and say, look, if he needed this medication, he would have purchased it. He needed the Coumadin, he purchased it. He did not purchase the amitriptyline.
But that argument might be persuasive if this claim was narrowly confined to the failure to provide the amitriptyline, if
yes.
I'm pronouncing that correctly, rather than the failure to treat the peripheral neuropathy.
But I submit to you it is, Judge. It is only that. That's the only medication that's ever discussed in any of the briefs. Their claim, the plaintiff's claim, is that we failed to provide amitriptyline to him. That's it. They have a single allegation with regard to the treatment of his neuropathy. According to the plaintiffs, their contention is that he has neuropathy, he needs amitriptyline, you did not give him the amitriptyline, and therefore you lose. That was their theory of the case. There was never an allegation or even a suggestion that the defendants should have prescribed something different. They hang their hat entirely on the administration of the amitriptyline. And as the record in this case shows, and this is also undisputed, using amitriptyline, an antidepressant, to treat neuropathy is an off-label use anyway, which is the second issue in connection with these doctors. Dr. Aguinaldo, one of the defendants, has never prescribed amitriptyline to any patient, and he would not prescribe it because it's a psychotropic medication. And I would submit that a physician who stays within the confines of the FDA's approval for the use of a drug is consistent with the standard of care. That's exactly what he should do in a situation like this.
Well, I understand that argument, but once the person was aware that he had this painful condition, weren't they obligated to prescribe something else to treat him if they didn't want to treat him with the amitriptyline?
Well, they did, Judge. What happened chronologically is he arrived at jail April 17th. On April 18th, he was seen by Dr. Aguinaldo. Dr. Aguinaldo examined him. The plaintiff told Dr. Aguinaldo about his relationship with Loyola, and Dr. Aguinaldo asked the nursing staff to obtain the records from Loyola so he could see why was he being given this off-label drug for this purpose. While they were waiting for the records to come, he had an appointment with Dr. Guzman on May 17th. Dr. Guzman at that time called and spoke to the neurologist at Loyola. They discussed his treatment, why he was getting the amitriptyline, and on May 17th, Dr. Guzman issued an order for the amitriptyline to be provided to the plaintiff. And from that point forward, an order was in place for that medication to be provided for the plaintiff. So in that respect, there was an initial period of time when they were waiting for the records to come from Loyola, but when they did not get them in time, Dr. Guzman actually picked up the phone and called the doctor and confirmed why the medication was given, what they were trying to achieve, and what its purpose
is. Is that to say that the doctors weren't told when they initially examined the plaintiff that he had peripheral neuropathy?
Oh, no, Judge, that's in the record. Absolutely true.
So they were told.
Dr. Aguinaldo knew. Yes, indeed, Your Honor. He knew about the peripheral neuropathy, and he knows about it. He's never treated it. And he knew about the amitriptyline being the drug selected by Dr. Ascanape at Loyola to treat it. You're absolutely correct.
So that much they knew. They didn't have the complete records from Loyola, but they knew as of their first visits
yes.
with this plaintiff that he had this condition.
Absolutely true. And their approach was, since I know I'm out of time, but their approach was to get the records so they could see why he was being given this drug, because Dr. Aguinaldo's examination showed him to be in no distress. He was walking about the jail normally. He was walking in and out of the appointment, and there was no evidence of any distress. And so they wanted to obtain the records because there was no crisis at that time as far as his need for the amitriptyline. Thank you, Your Honors. I ask you to affirm the trial court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Vogt. Mr. Roberts? Two minutes for Mr. Roberts, exactly as he requested.
Thank you very much, Your Honors, and good morning. I'm here on behalf of Defendant Appellee Mannion in this matter. And Mannion's position in this is really limited to just one grievance that was filed by the appellant on June 20th, 2005. It's been mischaracterized as a grievance revolving around his receipt of amitriptyline and or this eye examination. But a careful review of that grievance and the record indicates that the only thing that he was talking about was his desire for a wheelchair. He now claims that Mr. Mannion was deliberately indifferent to his serious medical needs because he didn't get a wheelchair. But Mr. Mannion's position is that he's non-trained medical jail staff, and as such, he's perfectly within any law in this circuit and any law that we're aware of to rely on the judgment of those who are trained in the medical profession in responding to inmate complaints, which is exactly what he did. He received this complaint on June 20th of 2005. On June 22nd of 2005, Mr. Mannion told Mr. Williams that the qualified, trained medical staff had denied his request for the wheelchair, and as such, that grievance had been denied. That's what this is limited to in terms of Mr. Mannion's involvement in terms of any sort of deliberate indifference standard. And as this court knows, again, non-trained, non-qualified jail staff, at least in terms of medical qualifications, is perfectly justified in relying on the medical staff in terms of responding to these sorts of complaints. I would suggest also to the court, in addition to this timely response to Mr. Williams' grievance of June 20th, that not only did Mr. Mannion respond in a timely manner, Mr. Williams saw Dr. Aguinaldo, I believe, on June 22nd, the very day he received his response from Mr. Mannion, and then again saw Dr. Guzman on June 24th, 4 days after he initially filed the grievance, 2 days after he got the response. If he had some other concerns beyond, well, even including his use of a wheelchair, but even in terms of an eye examination or amitriptyline, he certainly could have raised those concerns with those doctors most medically qualified to address those concerns at that point in time. The record is that he did not do that. So from Mr. Mannion's perspective, there's a very straight line here. He got a grievance on the 20th of June. He responded to that grievance based on his reliance from qualified medical personnel on the 22nd of June, and it in no way, shape, or form rises to the level of deliberate indifference to Mr. Williams' serious medical needs. For those reasons, we would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the court below. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Now, Mr. Adams, we asked you so many questions that we used up, I think, all of your rebuttal time. So we'll give you 2 more minutes.
That's plenty. With respect to Mannion, I would ask again that careful consideration be given to Plaintiff's Exhibit 4, especially the text, Williams' handwriting, that begins at page 5, where he specifically talks about the fall, the problems with his eyes, the fact that he's been referred for an eye exam he can't get. Mannion, he was sent to Mannion Mannion was supposed to be his advocate, to go get him his care. When Mannion is deposed, Mannion said, I did nothing about those particular complaints. I took no action, didn't call those complaints to the attention of any of the medical staff. It doesn't excuse Mannion that Aguinaldo and Guzman may then subsequently have also violated Williams' constitutional rights. The fact that Mannion did so is sufficient. The fact that he isn't medically trained under the Greeno case that we cited, page 7 of our reply, and the Grievousen case that we cited, page 6, but misspell, for which I apologize, there's an E after the V in Grievousen. Those cases involve non-medically trained prison guards who did nothing in response to similar complaints. That doesn't excuse Mannion. On the other issues regarding the need for amitriptyline and the seriousness of both the eye condition and the peripheral neuropathy as it related to the need for amitriptyline, there are questions of fact all over this record that rate a jury's consideration, and that's all that Wes Williams asked for this morning. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks to one and all, and we will take the case under advisement.